The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Welcome to Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 9, Episode 3, titled Warning Signs. Aaron, do you see any warning signs on this show's horizon?
This episode is like a tomato laid at Carl's grave.
Oh, it's Carl? I thought it was maybe a dog. Maybe they had lost like a beloved pet or something.
Yeah. Their kitty died. The goldfish, okay, the one so at the state fair, died.
That was Carl.
But it's just tomatoes full of hope, but ultimately dashed under the heels of the saviors as they exit the camp. I mean, like, I continue to be very charmed about the overall direction that the world is taking. And I like this conspiracy, this Maggie Darrell conspiracy to stop the madman Rick from preserving all of history's greatest monsters. Mm-hmm. But there was some old school, The Walking Dead execution stuff, the raid on the squeaky shingle shack.
Okay.
Some bullshit there. There was a couple other things, but I mean, yeah, overall, I quite enjoy the direction the things are taking, and everything feels like all the fights now feel like they're kind of realistic. Oh, Trash Girl's back to being evil, I guess.
Yeah.
She gave it a good couple weeks. The very first time someone questioned the loyalty of a shifty ex-trash woman, she's ready to fucking, I don't know, engage in human trafficking. That's kind of weird, but hey. Yeah. It's the fucking zombie apocalypse. What are you going to do?
Everything with that speech from Gabriel last episode, none of it stuck. Zero of
none
it.
None of it stuck. Mm-mm. No. Nope. It's like,
remarkable. Like
so many grease slicks at a junkyard just rolls right off the backs of the grease pits. I don't know. I've lost my own analogy, Jim. That's
it's
kind
fine.
Of The Walking Dead.
Yeah. I don't think they care that much about their analogies. tomato equals community, I guess.
Yeah,
we had barley equals intellect way back in the day. Now we have tomato equals community. It's all vegetables.
We need a tomato charter.
We do.
You got to make ketchup from this crushed tomato. The ketchup charter.
Oh yeah, you can't
waste. 57 tomato. Special blend of rules and restrictions.
I think they still have the copyright in the recipe. I don't think you're allowed to make Heinz 57 in the apocalypse.
Man. That's not good.
No.
You're gonna fuck with copyright and with you got zombies and evil humans and now lawyers coming after you? Not a great way to spend the apocalypse.
No, if you're reestablishing civilization, the first thing you do is get copyright in place, right?
Yeah.
So you can have, like, I don't know, Bambi and Dumbo and stuff like that?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, also, like, no one's trademarked the term zombie in this universe. Like, that's day one. You got to get
true.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want all those other shows, all the other knockoff shows to be called Walking Dead and Rotting Corpses and Biter Survivor, and you'll be the one zombie show.
There you go. All right. That's enough bullshit, but we've got another hour of it, so let's get into it.
Yeah.
We start off with the zombies feasting on the asshole from last episode who, I'll just say, don't know anybody's name. Don't give a shit about anybody's name. You're going to hear a lot of nicknames in this podcast, and it's as it should be. So we'll keep it going from there.
Rico Suave is this guy's name. I looked it up.
Awesome. he gets up, and we see a final warning sign spray painted onto a building from someone.
I will say that, man, I have not got a lot of credit that I'll extend to this show, because like when the zombies were eating this corpse and then it started jiggling and moving, I'm like, what the fuck? Where are fresh zombies coming from in this stage of the apocalypse? And then as Rico Suave got up, I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that answers the question of what happened to him at last episode.
Well, it does.
I'm watching you. I'm watching you, Walking Dead. I better not see very many fresh zombies, unexplained zombies.
Yeah, not a lot of people out there without a community. Okay, so here's the problem with this, is it retroactively makes last episode worse or more egregious in terms of Walking Dead, because Walking Dead has a history of building characters up in the episode that they kill them. And it come to find out, actually, that happened twice last week. Once with the no-name kid on the horse who tried to defend their shitty wagon and lost his life.
Was in the first. So they did spread it across three episodes. Now. This isn't back to back.
My bad. Twice this season already. The first episodes both had one of these. And now this asshole Rico Suave, he apparently got killed at the end of last episode. So they built him up as a character only to kill him an episode later. All right, next scene. Rick wakes up to a new day while Michonne's lingering in bed, and he goes outside and he really just drinks in how well the community is developing. For the third episode in a row. And then he places a tomato...
In your face, Negan.
I guess on a child's grave, Carl's grave.
It's not very clear, is it?
It is very much not clear. I would have thought there would be some kind of, like, marker that said has a name on it. Like, you know, considering this was his son, he might do a little bit more.
You might have nailed it with the family pet. It did feel kind of like the sort of feng shui swirling gravel pattern you would do over a beloved canine or perhaps even feline. But for your future generations. I don't know if you did them. I mean, shit, I see what they're doing to the church in the background, Rick. Seems like you guys can spare some labor to put some kind of monument to...
Or your own labor. Jesus. He's your kid.
Yeah. 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 This is your nights and weekends, man. Put in some elbow grease. I do like, there's a couple things I like. I really like the cute kind of chevron memorial on the inside of his house with, Carl and Judith's handprints from some of Carl's last days. Mm-hmm. I did like the fact that, like, it really tells the story of him, you know, Rick, of all people, goes out in his own community, doesn't wear a gun, doesn't have his hatchet. He feels totally at peace and at ease in this community.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got these extensive gardens and stuff. Like, Alexandria looks like it's really making it. I thought these scenes were pretty effective. And, you know, not for nothing, it trades on how much I like Andrew Lincoln and Sheriff Rick Grimes.
Yeah, it's getting to the point where it's a little belabored. Constantly saying, okay, Rick's happy with the way the community's going. Like, every episode he seems to do this around a campfire when, you know, his bridge crew is all reveling.
I think it's supposed to really sell you. I think it's really starting to, it's supposed to sell you on, like, this is his ritual to kind of put it in Negan's face. Like, he wakes up wanting to murder the man.
Okay.
And walks up and down his property, and like this is his like Zen meditation. You know, that like this is what keeps him. This is what keeps him sane. So it does feel a little ritual. Okay. I don't know. So I think it's supposed to be like Walter White cutting the crust off his sandwiches. It's just like something you notice in the background. But I guess if they spend 5 minutes each episode,
right, cutting crust that's off a lot sandwiches. Of crust. Yeah,
it's a lot of crust.
So he goes back inside where he and Michonne talk about the state of the communities, and Judith is sick, so they decide they're going to take her to the doctor, which Rick neglects his duties for, I guess. Although, he ends up trying to say that making a baby is not neglecting his duties and convincing Michonne to do that, but he's neglecting to take his sick daughter to the doctor, so I don't know, half dozen of one.
Yeah, well, I have mixed feelings about this, because it's like I understand it's supposed to be... like, broadly speaking, construed as supportive, that like, oh, hey, you know, you're working too hard, come in and stop working. But I actually fucking hate this trope. Like, fucking let the man or woman work. She's literally making a charter for all of humanity to live under post-zombie apocalypse, you know? Mm-hmm. You can take your magic penis and peddle it some other place, and it'll still be there 12 hours from now when she's wanting to wind down for the evening, you know? Let her work on the goddamn charter.
Yeah.
So
I think I'm with you. I couldn't help but notice, like, when he doesn't close this door, it feels a weird thing to do in the zombie apocalypse, to not close a door. right?
Yeah.
I would think you would close every single door you possibly could. You would want as many barriers between you and any potentially zombified former living humans.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Like, I think we've mentioned this on a few podcasts that, like, this kind of thing would change people's way of life.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's this period of time where a lot of people built these, you know, transparent coffin lids and, like, little bell assemblies because they're paranoid about being buried alive before embalmment. And, you know, there's before being embalmed became normalized. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a brief period of time where, like, oh, God, you know, we could actually be buried alive. Who knows? It's kind of macabre science versus, oh, we'll just pump everyone full of formaldehyde and make sure they're fucking dead before we put them in a coffin. But they don't seem to ever do that. Like, people still, like, I understand you love your mate and you want to cuddle up with them at night. But holy cow, you're going to sleep every night with Schrodinger's zombie.
Yeah.
Michonne is one completely silent killer, like, aneurysm away from making Judith a fucking two-time orphan.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it doesn't seem like they're very concerned at all about people suddenly dying within the community.
Yeah, like, I mean, maybe you get like a Dick Van Dyke situation where you got a split bed. You got, like, a demilitarized zone and you wear some kind of iron shackle around your neck.
Shield.
You can sleep in the bed, but, you know, you can't rise up and slay your family. I agree. I feel like this is the next level. We need to get some alternate sleeping arrangements. We need to really lean into the fact that we could at any time die and raise up and slay an entire family, house full of people.
Yeah, or an entire community full. Like, you could lose your whole community this way if everybody's got their doors open.
And how many
open.
Times has it happened on this show?
Yeah.
It happened, I know, at least once in Hilltop and once in a prison. That's two times in both of these, like, community leaders' living memory. Fucking stop sleeping together, people.
All right, Maggie and a guy who I can only describe as poor man's Glenn. Did
yes!
they not put a Glenn lookalike yes! sitting next to Maggie on this wagon?
Yeah, man. I applaud Maggie for going out and finding some Glenn looking motherfucker and bringing him up in the wagon with you. Yeah.
What the hell? I honestly
blanket.
Thought it was Steven Yeun for a while. I was like, did they forget that he's dead and bring him back as a guest star? What happened?
Does Maggie roll up on the buggy? Like, come on, not Glenn. Get up. You're riding shotgun. Like, yeah.
It was amazing. Absolutely
Same,
amazing.
My notes say homeless man's version of Glenn. Yes, yes.
So they're riding down the road and they're stopped by some saviors who are looking for their friend. And they menace Maggie and they eat a tomato, but they don't cause too much harm. Then Maggie and fake Glenn spots the walker asshole from last episode.
Mm-hmm.
The savior.
Yeah. Cute family fun day. I like that. The little, you know, montage of, and I do feel like the feeling good days are kind of over for Rick. This all seems very bad.
If
he doesn't get this murder solved, it's going to rip the community apart. They're not going to have any bridge. And then the dream of the tomato charter will die.
And by the end of the episode, like, it's clear there's no solving this murder without destroying this community anyway. So, yeah. Like, it's kind of a catch-22 situation.
What I thought was interesting, though, is this standoff. You're conditioned to think the saviors are being total assholes, but, mm-hmm. like, if you flip it from their perspective, Maggie and fake Glenn are being just as cagey and circumspect about how they're answering and menacing and, like, putting their hand... Like, it's a really well-written and constructed scene. You've got, like, shitty tattoo girl who's, like, barely able to maintain the peace... but it feels very real, like two groups of people that have a lot of reason to distrust each other giving in to those weaknesses and impulses.
And I don't know why, I can't remember if I've seen him in something else, but I really like this tomato chomping guy. Kind of the leader of the rebellion here.
He's Shoe Black Beard Man in my notes.
Yeah,
he's
very
just
black
got
beard.
A monolithic black head of hair just,
oh yeah,
every hair-bearing surface bristling with that jet black hair.
Yeah, gotta wonder if that's natural in the apocalypse.
Yeah, and also, like, I thought it was heavy with portent that Rick is reading Wizard of Oz, you know, right before, I can't remember if this is right after Dorothy gets done with the beautiful dream of the Land of Oz or before the tornado comes and takes her away, but either way, it's you know, foretelling a lot of change in Rick's life to come.
Yeah. Okay, so we kind of talked about that musical montage, and then we go to the bridge crew in full revolt, and it takes Carol and the threat of a gun to quell this uprising. But things continue to head toward violence eventually until Rick shows up, gun drawn, and tells everyone to back off, and they begrudgingly listen to him. And then there's a conversation here where Rick asks Gabriel where Trash Lady was last night. Gabriel vouches for her, says she was with him all night. And then Boston Rob tries to convince Maggie and Rick to give them guns, but they hold strong with, you know, Maggie asking, I guess, the right questions. Who killed this asshole savior guy?
Rick riding in on a literal high horse is the highlight of the episode to me. And I started thinking, this could be a really fucking cool Western if they just let it happen.
Okay.
I mean, think about it. It's like a postmodern Western where people are riding horses. You got Rick, who's already kind of like this mythic Western figure with that hat that he used to go around in. He's got a six shooter. And they're like, what is this collection of communities but a bunch of rough spun frontier towns? Mm-hmm. And you've got a hostile force of zombies that kind of is like allied with nobody, standing in for the Native Americans. Like, you could have, you know, you could have just a slightly better version of a Western, or a very modern, refreshed version of a Western. And I think it would be really cool to see, you know, Sheriff Grimes trying to keep the peace amongst these communities. Oh, God, someone's fall down the water hole, you know.
Again?
The mine shafts collapsed. Yeah, it's fake Glenn. He's drowning
down in the water hole.
We tried to dangle the Glens one too many times, and it's finally blown up in our faces. Like, I think that would be super cool.
Yeah.
A post-apocalyptic Western.
I could see it. And that could definitely be where they're headed with this. It doesn't seem like this tension between the communities is letting up anytime soon.
Yeah, no, there's a ton of awesome stories they can tell. Just like, again, just frontier cut off from civilization, like really cut off from civilization. I think it'd be an idea worth exploring.
Yeah. This scene, I kind of like the savior I'm calling Necktat, because I don't know her name. But
a shitty tattoo girl, I see. Yeah.
Shitty tattoo girl, yeah. That's
probably how she's credited.
The best of the bunch here. Like, I'm... Yeah, I don't know. She seems level-headed and eager to get started on building something.
Yeah, I like how there was like this. You know, there's this one scene in the movie Airplane where everyone's lining up to calm down this hysterical woman,
and they're
you know, like someone says, like, get a hold of yourself, and the doctor's like, please, please, you can't do this. I'm a doctor. And he just starts slapping her, and I felt like this was this with the crowd, except for Shitty Tattoo goes, the girls and Gabriel both trying to hold the line. They're lightweights. Boston Rob comes in. He's the fucking hammer. He's going to put it down. He gets gainsaid. Then Carol comes in. I'm like, aw, now that's a cooler. That's Patrick Swayze coming into a roadside bar and just cooling everything down. But no, they looked like they were all ready to go Gangs of New York style, like fucking machetes and axes. And then Rick rides a literal horse. Oh, it's amazing. I fucking loved it. So good.
Oh, yeah. So then Gabriel tells Trash Lady that Rick asked about her and wants to know if she saw anything. And she's pretty cagey with a non-answer here, questioning whether Gabriel trusts her. I still see that she's recovering from that devastating trash cut she gave herself.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day. Like, the bangs aren't quite there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to take quite a few more months of growing that out to undo the damage.
The forelocks are returning. Nature is healing itself, yeah. This is another kind of shitty Walking Dead thing to do, where you've got this character who's obviously being evasive and cagey and distrustful, and Gabriel, who... I didn't like that. Gabriel really didn't have time to redeem himself in my eyes. He was doing stupid shit until late seventh, if not eighth season.
Yeah.
So I still kind of don't like him by reflex, and now he's putting the entire community at risk by withholding information. What the hell? What the hell, Gabriel?
Yeah. I really don't know how to feel about Trash Lady, because I get like that she's not trusted in the community, and she feels like she wants to be, but that takes time. It's just it's really just a matter of time and proving yourself, and people will start to trust you, like Gabriel said.
Yeah.
You know, last episode, but she's very impatient, I guess, with that. Or I can't tell if it's some kind of like impatience and annoyance with being questioned all the time, or if it's something that she is kind of half planning all along. Was it fuzzy to you at all, or is this something I'm just
I think this is really annoying because it's a sudden unexplained shift. I mean, I guess it's kind of explained. She's like, well, Rick, you know, questioned me. I'm like, yeah, he's going to fucking question Daryl. Like, that's what you do. But she's, I don't know, there's some kind of, she's got this easy out with this. But that's the other thing. It's like, she said she was an elementary school teacher. And then the fall of man happens and she becomes a slave trader. And then she gets up with this outfit and they fight this giant war against Negan and they're having this much success and literally the first fucking setback. And she's like, oh, you know what? I better go throw my lot back in with the fucking slave traders.
Yeah.
Like how that doesn't seem, it makes her seem like a very weak, foolish person, which maybe she is. But, you know, why the episode and a half of trying to make me like her and buy into this Gabriel and relationship, especially since Gabriel, I don't really like him either, you know?
Well, if I know Walking Dead, it's because they're going to kill her soon.
Probably. She's going to die in a helicopter crash.
Yes.
The very next episode. Those things are dangerous.
All right. Rick interrogates Daryl, asking if he shot the asshole with a crossbow. Daryl claims not to know who did it, but to definitely know why, because these people can't coexist.
You think Daryl was conspicuously sharpening his knife just to give Rick the opportunity? I was like, I've never seen a more ostentatious, showy sitting down to sharpen a knife in cinematic history. Like, there's a big stage, a clearing, ample privacy, goes out there, kind of does a 360, looks around, locks eyes with Rick, starts sharpening that thing. Like, this was Daryl inviting the investigation. Like, don't make Rick come down and hunt me down.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because I think Daryl wants to, you know, impress upon Rick how he feels about this, but also he seems weirdly reluctant to talk about it. And I guess that's Daryl. Like, he doesn't talk about things. He does things.
And he's mad that Rick, like, you know, because, like, there is also some interesting mystery, you know. Daryl, he's not past murdering saviors. But you know, we also know Daryl enough to, like, if he wanted Rico Suave dead, as he himself said, I would have done it in plain sight. There'd be no question. I wouldn't fucking murder someone in the shadows, Rick.
Yeah.
So he's annoyed that he's being asked, but he also knows that Rick has to ask, and his reputation for leader. I don't know. There are people. It's Daryl's a frustrating figure because he himself lacks any leadership qualities, apparently. And he recognizes that Rick has them, but then he's also angry that Rick is utilizing, like, well, you know, I got to treat everybody the same, or, you know, I wouldn't be a very good leader, Daryl. That's how this shit works. And Daryl's like, ah.
He literally says that. He literally says,
yeah. Yeah.
During the episode.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's not leadership. That's how you can't rile the troops with a hearty, yeah.
Maybe if you were a wildcat. Maybe.
Yeah. You got some discount penguin henchmen. You can order them around like that, but not these rough spun savior types.
I do like this scene a lot though, because the erosion of even the oldest community members here, the trust that they have in each other, is happening, and I feel like that is the most dangerous part of this, because you could, you know, just kind of segregate these people and say, okay, saviors do their thing, but when you get the people who are instrumental, in the success of all these communities butting heads, I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, and it makes sense. And I also like the final note in the scene where Rick brings it all the way back to the beginning.
Yes, I was going to mention
that. And it's like, you know, I know this goes against every bit of your instinct, Daryl, just like the time you didn't kill the man who left your brother to die up on a rooftop. Like, that's fucking good storytelling. And Absolutely. There's so few OG survivors that, like, I'm constantly kind of flummoxed that the show doesn't lean more into, like, you know, Carol and Rick and Carol and Daryl and Rick and Maggie and all those guys, because that's where the real connection is. Definitely have them have adventures with the side characters, bring them along too, but man, it's so strong when they get to mine those 8 seasons of history we have with these characters.
Yep.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. All right, Maggie and Seabreeze patrol the trails and follow a few walkers to a house where there are a bunch of walkers making noise on a shingle. And they grab a rusty pitchfork and they move in to take them out so they don't attract more. They almost get eaten until Rick and Daryl show up to save them. Rick finds someone who says she got knocked out by something from behind, and while she was out, someone was taken. People's names, man. I think it's like Apoc. Is this a Matrix character?
A-Rat.
A-Rat?
A-Rat is the bad girl's name. The good girl's name is B.
B and A-Pock.
Yeah, B and A-Rat. They're just throwing darts on a board, man.
Is this an A-B thing? Is this like the...
Oh!
I didn't even make that connection.
I thought you were a B, and turns out you're an A-Rat. I have a question. This little shack in the middle of the woods, do you think its tin roof is in fact rusted? Is that why the shingle's falling off and banging?
I mean, I assume so, yeah.
Hmm.
Yep. You're making reference that I'm not picking up.
Brought everybody to the shack, it did.
Okay.
I mean... Like, I get this. This is like, at first when I saw, like, you know, like, why are they doing this? Why do they have to? This is such a risky, crazy thing to do. But then I'm like, okay, well, there's this concept of these, you know, non-natural noisemakers that draw zombies in and they can form like these herds and stuff. So this is kind of like, you know, trying to stop a tornado before it exists.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I feel like that bad decking kills at least as many survivors as zombies do in the apocalypse.
It's true.
And the convenient timing of the breaking of wood, like the second those zombies were waiting to hear a board snap and an ankle scrape, because they came out of that fucking door like the Kool-Aid man after they heard that.
It's like, especially come on. Like when they show the shot of the boards flexing on the door. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go anywhere near that door.
No.
I would very carefully dispatch those walkers. I'd pry up a board near their heads off the thing. I'd be very careful as I was doing it, and I'd start stabbing them through the boards. Like, you saw them flex. It was insane. There's no way I would walk past that going, yep, that's secure.
The other thing I like to imagine is, how are the zombies standing on the other side of the door and such to array such a bristling range of fingers grasping?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if just dumb zombies are, like, banging against the door, like, they're all, like, coordinating, you know, what twister style to get every one of their fingers jammed through every one of the creases of the door. That's a lot of cooperation to get that awesome visual effect of the grasping
fingers. It's like when Adam Levine takes off his shirt and starts spinning it around and the sweat's hitting the crowd. Everybody's reaching for that sweat. You're getting, if you're at the front of that crowd, you're getting mashed against those rails, man.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's exactly like that.
Exactly like that.
But I don't know. Like, why do they need these? Like, you know, like this scene felt a little self-conscious to me, because it's like, well, if we don't have a person in zombie danger, every 15 minutes the show is going to be canceled.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather them go a couple, like, especially in this age of The Walking Dead, go a couple episodes between zombie attacks. Let them kind of build up that menace and fear again, because this shit just seems silly, especially when, like, Daryl comes in and kills one zombie and suddenly the attack is over.
Right, right. They really needed you to save him.
They had it down to one zombie, and he came in and got the one zombie that was going to undo the whole fucking improvised plan. Like, just stop. Yeah. Stop with the silly shit, man.
It is silly. I would advise him to keep this pitchfork, because their blacksmith might be able to use it to make more.
That's true.
Maybe he can, you know, discover what a pitchfork is. He had a real hard time envisioning the three prongs necessary to make a fucking pitchfork, so now they can bail.
He'd probably turn his nose up at it, too. He's like, hey, this ain't no museum-quality pitchfork. What the fuck?
This is rusty.
How much hail can you bail? Look how skinny this is. This is a big fork. Go get me a pitchfork, son.
All right, let's move on to them.
My son didn't die dragging me a plow so I could have a reference plow so you can bring me this bullshit fork. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah, he wants a museum-quality fork, or he won't reforge it.
So they set up search parties to find the missing woman. Rick and Carol pair up and talk about how hard it is to keep the community together, despite Rick being dead set on not letting it come to violence. He tells her his secret desire to kill Negan and why he doesn't. I guess we can talk about Daryl and Maggie as well. They just talk about how neither of them are sure Rick's plan is going to work, though Maggie wants to see it succeed. And then Daryl sees what I think is a driftwood arrow in someone and claims that he knows who killed or who took the missing woman.
Man, it doesn't make sense. That part doesn't make sense at all, because what actually is killing these people, they're intimating, is that spear gun.
Right.
So why is the presence of a driftwood arrow like Daryl's big, oh my God, I know who did it?
I mean,
because I thought the spear gun is some kind of complicated reusable. It's like a really long captive bolt gun. You know, you don't whittle new ones every time. You just keep reusing the same one.
Yeah. No, it's I mean, I guess because Seaside, Oceanside, whatever, Lakeview's got a monopoly on driftwood.
You know, it's also, I thought it was interesting that, like, in the previous scene, they established that Seaside Cindy, is got a hand injury that no one knows where it came from, but no one suspects it's a bite. It turns out she probably got that hand injury wrangling up these saviors, right?
Yeah, probably.
But I thought that was interesting that no one, like, in the middle of the zombie attack, she comes with this hand wound, and, you know, nobody asks, like, I guess they would suspect if she got bit, she'd just own up to it, fess up to it. Does everybody do that?
That's a dangerous expectation.
We're past the days of people hiding a non-fatal wound because obviously you'll be killed, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It seems like at least have the doctor check that out.
I also liked, Jerry. Is it Jerry the one, the quilted axe man?
Quilted Mountain, sure.
Yeah, Quilted Mountain. He raises the question of, like, okay, let's say we catch this A-Rat character. Are we going to handle it? Or we catch the perp. Are we going to handle it like a Gregory or a Negan? Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really... Because if you try to explain the differences between those two, it's really hard. Like, anything you can say about Gregory, about giving chance after chance, he never learned his lesson. Like, Negan fucking ran a slave/death camp. Come on. Do you think, I'm starting to think Rick is being a little naive with this saving Negan thing. Like, there should have been a justice system that judged what to do by community standards. And some of the saviors get pardoned because they were, you know, like, some of the victims could say, you know, I could always tell this guy I felt bad about, or he seemed very afraid. And then you get the A-Rat people that are, like, being casually cruel about that and, like, really gleeful. Mm-hmm. And you hang the ones that need hanging and you let go. Right. But, like, Negan probably should die.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I said it last episode. Like, he's if anybody's squandered as many decisions as Gregory has, it's Negan. You know, squandered opportunities to change his ways, to do better. They've given him chance after chance, and he's proven himself to be just a colossal asshole. So, yeah.
Do you think, because I haven't read past this point in the comics, and obviously I haven't seen it in the show, but do you feel like that this show is setting forth the fact that Rick might be wrong? Like, I don't think that... Like, Rick's way broadly is the right way to go. Like, you can't just kill everyone. that commit some kind of crime.
Sure, but that's why I thought Maggie's whole philosophy was right.
Maybe they're telling the story of why Maggie needs to take over and why Rick needs to step aside.
Yeah, I think it's headed that way. Maggie and Michonne seem to be like they're the new leaders of their respective communities.
Yeah.
Which,
I don't know. I like where it's going. I like the moral stakes and where this is bringing, like, you know, real serious characters into the confrontation. And without having one of them lose their minds. Like, right. Maggie's not going to have a psychotic break and see, you know, poor man's Glenn and think, oh, my God, my husband, baseball bat. I'm going to go in there and rush in with, like, this is a very methodical thing that they're doing. Like, you know what? We've tried it this way. We've tried it that way. We've seen the cracks in the system. Rick's going to throw a fit, so we're just going to take it upon ourselves and I guess that's where it's going to go.
This is one of those reasonable people can disagree situations, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's set up pretty well.
Mm-hmm. And I think my only question is Maggie going to get Michonne going to get this charter, or is it going to continue to be some of this freewheeling frontier justice kind of where it's just case by case? Like, well, if you do, you better not get caught in Maggie Town because boy, they string people up like. Right. Converse sneakers over there, whereas like, oh, if you gotta fuck around in Alexandria, they got fucking Negan in jail. What are they gonna do with you? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. That might be interesting.
On the other hand, in the war against the dead, as Rick says, every life counts.
Every life counts, especially the ones locked into prisons, eating food and not contributing anything. Yes, those people count for sure. Mm-hmm. All right, Trash Lady returns home and pulls a walkie out of a secret stash box. She uses it to call the helicopter people. I feel so silly just describing these scenes because nobody has a name. The communities now don't even have names. They're the helicopter people to me.
She pulls out a working walkie-talkie from a trash junkyard. Yeah. How long has it been there? Uncharged, untended?
How long has it been since...
It feels like it's been at least 6 months, just based on everyone's facial hair and
I guess
level of bangs growing out. Yeah, me either.
She asks if they took the missing saviors. They say no, but the deal's still on as long as she can come up with an A. And Gabriel pops up, thinking he's a B.
I'm an A.
Turns out he's not. He pops up out of the trash and questions what she's doing. She admits to training people for supplies, but claims she's doing it because nobody trusts her. And she asked Gabriel to come with her to this promised land of helicopters and, I guess, A, slavery. He can't leave the rest of them, so she calls him an A and knocks him out.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. We're back to this A and B shit. Is this going to be the return of the Terminus folk? Did someone survive that fucking debacle? Because this goes back
Carol
to the A car.
But I, like, Rick did.
No, I'm talking about like the perpetrators of the Terminus camp.
Oh, okay. Tasha Yar survived. She's out there.
Did she really? I thought she died.
She did.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
No, well, her Romulan clone was able to get away. That's how that worked out. Because like that's this A B stuff is coming up again, and I'm wondering where they're going with it. I wonder if there's any like is there some broader hierarchy that we can't see involving helicopter people and blonde ladies in suits.
It's also stupid. I don't care. Like that's the problem. Is like this is just labeling people.
No, see, I'm excited.
A's and B's and like this code talk and trash people and
because I feel like it's a return of like you know like the pre-nation state where it's like okay here in the DC suburban area you have like Rick's group and we think that's the world but there's probably a fucked up Appalachian mountain society and there's the fucking you know weirdos living on islands in Maine and we haven't even gotten to the South or the Midwest yet like
Scott Kimple's new show. You know,
whatever that is.
Five more communities than that. I don't know.
Fear the fucking dead. I don't know. Fuck the Walking Dead. How about that?
Yeah. It's not good. If Trash Lady Jadis comes to me and says, "Hey, I want to take you off to this paradise land," and she says, "There's only one thing," I'm thinking. The thing here is that the place we're going is a much larger trash heap with mountains of gold. which I guess translates to like used couch cushions and abandoned broken lamps. I don't know. Like I can't imagine the world she takes me to where I go, yeah, that's where I want to be.
Also, what did she think that? Did she think that this man who she thought was a B, which I guess is less than the A, was going to help her catch an A? She thinks Gabriel is going to help her do that? Like, what does she know from Gabriel? I don't know. It's a goofy plot.
Yeah,
and I was kind of looking forward to Jadis continuing to redeem herself, but I guess not.
No.
Because here again, like, here's another thing where, like, I don't think you can come back from this. I'm sorry. I'm sorry if the first sign of hardship you decide to betray one of your own to some kind of shadowy helicopter-based slave cult. That's a Gregory. You're going into the Gregory column. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. You squandered your new choice. So plus they also betrayed everybody back in the war. They turned tail
and
so like fuck her. She needs to die. I hope I don't even care about it. I hope Gabriel dies too.
Yeah, they both die in a helicopter crash.
Hope they get in a helicopter. It flies over the horizon, and then there's a puff of smoke.
Yeah,
you smoke a puff, and then there's a puff of smoke, and we never see him again.
All right,
and then from that horizon rides Heath with his triple P
card.
Access card. Angela Kang totally redeems the show.
And it unlocks the funds for a season 10. Okay, let's go on to the next scene. Carol's ambushed by saviors who hold the knife to her throat while they negotiate with Rick for guns. They're not staying with the bridge crew. They're leaving. Carol manages to stab the guy and take them back to camp without killing anyone.
Which is great. I like the scene. The saviors are asking for an entire... Now, here's the thing about the saviors. This is the thing that like, this is so close to being super clever, but it falls apart because no savior has ever died while being in the fucking camp. It's guys who punch kids and who run off and crush people's arms and then get fucking lippy and surly about it. They get thrown out of the camp and then they get killed. But the idea of we're not protecting saviors doesn't seem like to have any basis in fact. And I wish that the Oceanside people had used some of their cranberry juice and some of their like in-group wiles to actually harm people inside the camp.
Gotcha.
So it did feel like, hey, we're being preyed upon. Maybe it's by our own because, you know, there's some demons among us. Maybe it's by these fucking Alexandrians and other people trying to, you know, get some revenge. But like having it be these people like these guys here are only in danger because they're outside at night fucking around, taking people hostage and demanding guns.
Yeah,
it's so close to being smart and something I can get on board with. And I feel like they didn't quite get it there.
And let's just point to what's his name? The Morgan acolyte, the kid, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just point to Ben and say, look, we don't give him a gun.
Yeah.
He gets a stick.
Look at him.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's the disparity between like, you know, how many people inside of the real communities like Alexandria and the Hilltop and the more established ones have guns. And I guess like, you know, Oceanside is they had guns. They had millions of guns, right?
They got them confiscated by Negan. I mean, that's the thing. It's like basically everyone who fought against Negan gets to have guns. Everyone who fought for Negan doesn't get trusted with guns,
right?
Which
I think is reasonable, but I can understand why they wouldn't see it that way.
Yeah, I just wish they were a little smarter about how they put this conundrum. And also, I really liked this kind of like Rick Carroll buddy cop thing that was going on. Because if they decide not to take it into a Western edge, this also would be a really cool procedural detective show.
Okay.
Can you imagine, again, Sheriff Rick trying to keep the law going between all these disparate communities, and they all have slightly different moral bents and slightly different relationships to him and law enforcement? Like, it was kind of fun watching him go around do his sheriff shit. And Carol is a really fucking next-tier cop buddy.
Uh-huh.
That whole, like, when she, like, you know, stabs him in the leg and puts him on his ass, and, why didn't you finish me? Because every life counts. It's badass. I liked it.
Yeah, I agree.
Get the hat back, Rick.
All right, we go to Maggie and Daryl, who go to where this asshole died, and they find the gas cans, plus they find Seabreeze and a few others with a gun to a savior's head. They all agree that the savior deserves to die, except for Maggie, who thinks it's just creating more problems. Seabreeze says she was inspired to take matters into their own hands when they saw Maggie kill Gregory.
I learned it from watching you.
The story here is effective enough to cause Maggie and Daryl to turn their backs and let her be killed. Although,
yeah,
you know, Maggie says she's now persuaded by Seabreeze, and it's a vicious circle.
Yeah, I think it's funny because, like, you know, she said that Cindy showed me the way. We gave Rixway a chance. It's time to see the Negan, and Daryl saying, "All right." That's a really cool scene. And I think that, like, again, it feels like I'm more on Maggie's side, that, like, this is a post-zombie apocalypse. We don't have the facilities to take everybody. Negan is just, like, too dangerous. Like, you have a bad, unlucky coup, and they get him out, and all this stuff starts right up again.
Yeah.
Like, you can have court. And, like, I'm not saying do it extrajudicially. Like, you could get a court of his peers to easily condemn this man for the many, many real crimes he committed. And then after you get the good, then you can do everything on a case-by-case basis. But, like, this, like, well, we don't kill people because that lets the dead win is fucking Batman logic. Yeah. You know, like, Batman will shatter a mook's spine in three places, and he gets a Joker, and that guy gets kid glove treatment to fucking Arkham Asylum until the next time he breaks out and kills a bunch of people with Smilex gas. It's insane.
Right.
Like, come on, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
What are you, Batman? I want to see your billions. I want to see your utility belt. You can't even carry a hatchet on that thing safely.
I do feel Seabreeze here, though, because, yeah, the Saviors did totally annihilate everyone they cared about, you know? Killed the men and the children in their community, and...
And, you know, that's the thing. It's like, I love the story because it invited me to feel for a rat for a minute. Like, you know, I guess, hey, I could... Negan's fucking crazy. If he wanted me, like, if the choice was, like, hey, if I don't do this thing, then the next person down the line is going to do it anyway, and I'm going to be killed.
Yeah.
But I think it's hard for a reasonable person to get to where you're taunting a little girl for the death of her 11-year-old brother.
Yeah. No, it's fucked up.
Like, there's being forced to follow orders against peril of death, and then there's taking glee and twisting the knife in a little bit more. And, you know, I thought it's the morals of this show don't look good for Rick Grimes' approach going forward.
Sure. But that's it. We get the tomato stomp at the end. You know, the symbol of the community is destroyed.
Oh, yeah.
See where it goes from here.
See what Well, Rick's going to tell that imaginary Negan face in the morning, because this is going to be a tomato stepping on that face forever and ever. I went back because remember I said that there was like this kind of like late moment in the season 8 finale where there's a conspiracy against Rick Grimes. And I went back and watched it, and it's in like the last 5 minutes. Maggie's got this Godfather scene with Jesus in her office, and she's talking about how, you know, she doesn't agree with Rick taking Negan prisoner. And she says, what we're going to do is we're going to build ourselves up. We're going to make this town thrive. We're going to be strong. We're going to be an example of what you can accomplish as a community. We're going to bide our time and wait because Rick's wrong, and we're going to show him. And then Daryl steps in and is like, damn right we are.
Right.
And then it seems like Maggie has kind of kept to her word. She has built Hilltop into this big thriving community. It's all the other communities lean on it too for support. And now she's at the end of this road, and she just can't stomach this, seeing these saviors bucking for being rearmed and having Negan still alive. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. So, no, it's gonna be interesting to see how this develops. I'm genuinely interested in that part of the season. I could take or leave Trash Lady and Gabriel. I could take or leave, you know,
hopefully we
so
will
many other
next
things,
next but... season. We're going to leave them out at the curb, and the trash people will come and take them away.
That'd be nice. I mean,
it'd be nice. Just dumpster them. Just take them out. Take them out. They're no good for anybody. Tried to sell Gabriel on Craigslist, and the one bad eye. Really, it's probably not a good look to talk about selling people.
No,
but you know what?
Not.
Leave that to the A and B types.
Yeah.
The weird post-apocalyptic helicopter people.
What are they doing with the A's and B's?
That's what I'm... What? Yeah.
What value is a I guess, slavery, like just forced labor?
Like, is an A good for, like, labor and secure? Like, how also... The question I also had with Terminus is, like, how do you induct people into the order? I think they explored that idea. Like, they make an offer of, like, hey, you know what? The world's shit. We can start eating people, you know?
And that determines if you're a B? Like a B comes willingly. A B can be, like, part of the community, whereas an A just ends up as a slave for that community.
Or I thought the opposite. Like, A is, like, a potential, like, predator, or B is the sheep class that just gets used and exploited, either for labor or food.
Yeah. Well, she calls him an A. I think she says, I thought you were a B. Spine. Turns out you're an A, and knocks him out. Yeah. I'm not sure.
What did you think? What quality did you think was A-like that she was highlighting there? Because I thought it was him standing up to her. She asked, yes. Genuinely shocked that he. Okay, so I think the A are the more like ass kickers, fire breathers.
Okay, I got it as like more of a cooperation judgment. Mm. Like, oh, you're going to cooperate with us versus you're not going to cooperate, and so you're an A.
See, I thought they're going back to the Terminus stuff where they kept them all in the A cart, and people had this theory that like all of them were ass kickers or something.
I'm not sure, and that's a problem that they're using similar or identical terminology to label people, and we don't fully understand what that label means. I didn't even fully understand what it meant back in Terminus days.
Sure,
but now I'm doubly confused because I don't see any way that those could actually be connected other than thematically through the show. But why? I don't know. Why are these two separate communities label their people like this?
I'm probably setting myself for a disappointment, but I'm hoping there's some sort of connection. Like, I really do hope that someone from Terminus escaped that maybe will be recognizable or, I don't know. It will be interesting. Hopefully we'll shut down these trash people though. Cause
shutting down the recap.
Don't need any Gabrielizing anymore. Okay. All right. This is our catch up episode. For The Walking Dead,
is that because we mashed too many tomatoes and now all we have left is ketchup?
We do. It's
I'm sorry.
The ketchup.
I'm sorry.
We got the ketchup accords, and we are going to be doing 904 next week. We are taking feedback. We are not reading it until this is still recording and we haven't even released the shows yet. We think we'll catch up our feedback sometime at like the halfway point of the season. You can send that in to walkingdead@baldmove.com. You can follow along with all the things that Bald Move are doing at Bald Move on all social media. And also, we got a nice community growing on our forums, forums.baldmove.com. If you want
to stop
by
and
say hi.
Don't be a fucking A.
Don't be an A. We'll sort you into the B forum, and boy, won't you be miserable with all those other fucking Bs.
Yeah.
You want to hang around guys like Gabriel? Quick to sell an organist out? All-star organist. Gonna shut a door in your face. Mm-hmm. Better have more than organ skills if you're going to be dealing with the bees in Gabriel land. We'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jay.
See ya.